The Book Nook on WISO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from the Clark County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Wright Memorial Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Microsun Lamps.
Good morning. You're listening to WYSO in Yellow Springs. I'm Vic McCunis, and today we have the best of the Book Nook coming your way, and a very interesting interview that I did back in 2002 with the editor of the Oxford English Dictionary. His name was Jesse Scheidlauer, and I talked to him about the shorter Oxford Dictionary, which had come out in a fifth edition. If you're into words, if you're into dictionaries like I am, you won't want to miss this interview coming up in the Book Nook following the news. Good morning. Welcome to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. Over the years that I've been hosting the program, I've had just a few opportunities to talk to people about dictionaries. I am a huge fan of dictionaries. When I was in the third grade, I got my own personal copy of Webster's Dictionary, and I was so happy. People thought I was a nerd when I would tell them, yeah, I'm reading the dictionary, and I read that dictionary all year long. I went through page by page and looked at all the words and learned a lot of new words, and I had a teacher in the third grade, Sister Ellen Clare from Dubuque, Iowa. She loved words too, and she taught us a lot of new words that year. And I have been a word freak ever since. I can still remember the words that Sister Ellen Clare taught us. Words like prevaricate and procrastinate and debris. I just love words. So back in 2002, when I had the opportunity to talk to Jesse Scheidlauer, an editor of the Oxford English Dictionary, about the fifth edition of the shorter Oxford Dictionary, I grasped the opportunity, and I called him on the phone at his office in New York. Are you familiar with the Oxford English Dictionary? It's only available now online. They haven't been printing it in a paper version for many years. And if you want to pick up a copy of it back in 2002, when we recorded this interview, that's the full Oxford Dictionary, 20 volumes. It would have cost you $3,000 to get the online version. The shorter version is quite a bit larger than most dictionaries you'll find. And back in 2002, I talked to Jesse Scheidlauer about the shorter Oxford Dictionary. Now, I have a confession to make. I did not read the entire Oxford Dictionary. I looked up individual words. I went through the alphabet, and I picked out a word for each letter of the alphabet, and I asked Jesse about a lot of these words. We talked about these words, and we had a lot of fun that day back in 2002. Let's listen now to Jesse Scheidlauer talking about the shorter Oxford Dictionary on the Best of the Book Nook.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and today my guest is Jesse Scheidlauer. We're going to be talking about the shorter Oxford English Dictionary, which just came out in its fifth edition. Welcome to the program, Jesse.
Thanks for having me on.
Jesse, what was your role in the creation of this fifth edition?
Well, I run the North American office of the Oxford English Dictionary, on which this dictionary is based. The dictionary is called the Shorter Oxford English Dictionary, but it's not that short. It's actually two large volumes, almost 4,000 pages total. It is, however, much shorter than the full-sized OED, which is right now 20 volumes long and would be even longer if we printed out the material that's been updated online over the last couple of years. So any American entry in the Oxford English Dictionary comes through my office.
I remember when the last edition of the OED came out, and I called Oxford and I said, I'd like a review copy of that. They thought that was very funny.
Well, it's something they heard a lot. Now, of course, the OED is coming out only online. We started the revision cycle with the letter M, and we're still publishing in that range. But it does make it easier to give out review copies because we can just give a press pass for 1 month and let people take a look at it.
Okay. The shorter Oxford English Dictionary was a result of what process? What made you decide to pare it down?
Well, the shorter originally came out in 1933, so this is the fifth edition of a work that's been going for quite some time. The reason is just that the full OED is very, very large, and you know, not everyone has the money or shelf space or time to use a dictionary of that sort. The OED is a great dictionary, but it is somewhat difficult to use if you're just looking to get a quick answer to a question. If you're just looking to find a definition or find out how something is pronounced or an etymology, it can take a lot of time to use because it's so large. You have to really search your way through the larger entries to find things you need. The shorter has most of the same material, but it has fewer citations. That is, what distinguishes the OED from most other dictionaries is that it's a historical dictionary. For every sense of every word in the dictionary, we give citations in it, ranging from the earliest one we can find to the most recent, within reason, including for senses that are long obsolete. You know, the purpose of the OED is not just to show what's in use now, it's to show what always has been in use. So what the shorter does is take the same general pattern, the historical treatment, but not print all the citations. So for any sense, we'll have at most one illustrative example rather than, you know, 5 or 10 or 20. And that's what makes it so much shorter, but most of the definitions are still there. So the information, except for the really obscure things, are still there, making it a good dictionary for people who want to find the information, but don't need the full set of everything.
My guest is Jesse Scheidlauer, and the book is The Shorter Oxford English Dictionary, which just came out in the fifth edition. When was the fourth edition released?
The fourth edition came out in 1993, so this has been almost 10 years, which is typical at this point in dictionary publishing for new editions of dictionaries. It's the period in which there is a relatively large amount of new words coming into the language. There are changes in research, scholarly research, that lead you to recast some etymologies. You want to have different designs because, you know, design principles change over time. So, you know, for a dictionary of this scope, that's kind of typical.
We've also had a lot of technology changes over just that decade. Tell us how you got up to the letter I on index cards and then you switched.
Well, it was about 15 years or so ago that we started. I mean, the OED has actually been in the forefront of lexicographical computing for some time, but the citations themselves were collected electronically only since, I think, 1989 or 1990 or so. Before that, everything was done on paper, usually 4x6 slips, of which there are many, many millions in the offices in Oxford. There are still some things coming in on paper, but almost everything that comes in now comes in electronic form. So we started that almost 15 years ago now, and we have something like 70 million examples of things stored in electronic form in our database, which is what we use to base our definitions on.
How do you decide to add a new quote?
Well, a new quote as such, that is a new quote to an existing sense, would be a process of just trying to keep an entry up to date. We would look at the, in the full OED, we would look at the evidence that's available there. We would always want to add an antedating, that is an example earlier than the earliest known example, which is very important because the thing that the OED lets you do that few other things, information that few other places can give you, is telling you how old something is, and knowing that something is a bit older than you thought it was really makes you rethink what you thought you knew about the history of the language. So you would always put in an antedating. A postdating, that is an example later than the latest example you previously found, is also useful. So if you had an entry from the original OED, back from the 19th century, early 20th century, you might have an example where the latest example is from 1880, even though the term is still in use. Mm-hmm. So in a case like that, we would want to add a very recent example or even several recent ones showing that it really is up to date, the term is still in use. Here are some examples from current authors. For the shorter, we would be less likely to do that because the evidence we would have in there, we have many fewer citations, so the evidence we have is probably going to be enough. An exception would be if we add a new term, of course, we would put in a quotation from a recent author showing the use of that term. Or if something, for whatever reason, didn't have a good example available and we found a better one from a recent author, we would put that in. And we've added a number. We've added about 500 new illustrative quotations to this edition of the shorter by a variety of prominent authors. Some of them are Tom Clancy, Douglas Copeland from Generation X, Helen Fielding, the British Jones Diary author, William Gibson, Stephen Jay Gould, John Grisham, Frank McCourt, Simon Sharma. So, a lot of J.K. Rowling, a lot of very well-known authors, have been read, and they're, even the recent ones are going into the book.
In the case of authors who are still living, for instance, Maeve Binchy, I know you quoted, did you contact her and say, we're going to use your quote, or do you have to ask permission? How does that work?
No, the general, there's the scholarly principle of fair use, where it's okay to quote a sentence or so from a source, even if it's current. We would never ask permission. We don't think we need to ask permission for using a quote in this way. There are cases where we do get in touch with authors, primarily when we think an author might have some special information about the term. Often when you have authors who coin terms or who you think coin terms, we will get in touch with them and see if they have any information they can tell us. For example, the term quark for a type of subatomic particle was apparently coined by the Nobel laureate physicist Sheldon Glashow, and we got in touch with him, and there's a whole story behind it where the term was suggested to him by a passage in Finnegan's Wake. We quote him in the entry. That was a terrific example, but other things as well. What was I working on recently? The name for computer language, Perl, spelled P-E-R-L, which was a language written by Larry Wall, a computer programmer. We got in touch with him asking about the history of the term, the spelling. There are several acronyms that are said to be the origin of the term, and we were able to get in touch with him directly, and he said, well, there are acronyms, but really I came up with the name first and then came up with the acronyms, this sort of thing. So that can be very helpful for us.
How fun. My guest is Jesse Scheidlauer. The book is The Shorter Oxford English Dictionary, which just came out in a fifth edition, and he joins us today in the Book Nook. How does a person get into this line of work, Jesse? When did you decide you wanted to work on the Oxford?
It's not an easy line of work to get into. There are very few positions available in lexicography. Especially, as time goes on, there are more people doing freelance work, fewer in-house lexicographers. Most people do have training in linguistics or English, but not necessarily. At the OED, which has a very large staff, we have a wide range of specialists where we have an MD on staff, we have someone with a PhD in cell biology, we have a mathematician and so forth. So it's not just middle English geeks doing the work. Yeah. There's a wide range of people. But generally, to be in lexicography, you're talking about some kind of fairly serious humanities or linguistics training and a lot of luck to get a job like this. I had been at Random House in the Random House Reference Department for 9 years before I joined the staff of the OED.
You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, building a more informed community with independent news and storytelling. It's the Best of the Book Nook, and we are listening to an interview I did back in 2002 with an editor with the Oxford English Dictionary. His name is Jesse Scheidlauer, and he had just been involved in the fifth edition of the Shorter Oxford Dictionary. And I'll continue my conversation with Jesse, recorded 17 years ago, right after this. The Best of the Book Nook continues on WYSO. Back in 2002, I had an opportunity to talk to an editor of the Oxford English Dictionary. His name is Jesse Scheidlauer, and he's a very interesting man. In fact, during this interview, I discovered that he is the author of a book called The F Word. This came as a big shock to me. He was an authority on the F Word. Who knew? That's the kind of thing you learn on programs like the Book Nook. Let's go on back now into the second segment of our interview with Jesse Scheidlauer.
I really enjoyed the quotations in the new dictionary, and so many of them struck me as being wonderful examples of that particular word usage. And I just had Justin Kaplan on, the editor from Bartlett's Familiar Quotations, the other day, and I asked him where the quotes were coming from, and of course the Bible and Shakespeare led the way. It seems to me Shakespeare has a very good share of quotations in the dictionary. Is that accurate?
It is. Shakespeare is the single most frequently cited author in the OED. That's actually something that's going to change a bit as the revision process goes on. Shakespeare was obviously enormously influential, but not as influential, perhaps, as the amount of evidence in the dictionary would lead you to think. One of the reasons that there are so many Shakespeare examples is that a conscious decision was made that pretty much anything that was in Shakespeare, or, you know, any word that you could find an example of in Shakespeare, would go in. Hmm. And the same wasn't done to other authors at the time. And also, there were other factors. For example, the use of concordances. And nowadays you have everything or a tremendous amount of material available electronically. So if you need a particular example, you can just go to the computer and find an example. When the dictionary was originally being done, that wasn't possible. So while it's pretty easy to find an example of a relatively common word, if you're doing this hundreds and hundreds of times a day, it becomes much more difficult. So if I said, well, I need an example of the word murder from the 16th century, without doing a lot of reading, you know, even though it's a very common word, you'd have to do a lot of reading to actually find that one example. With Shakespeare, it was all available in concordance even then, so you could just flip to the concordance and find your example. So things like that are reasons why Shakespeare is so commonly cited. But there have been studies. There was a famous one, for example, comparing Shakespeare and Nash, who was active at around the same time, showing that Nash, even though he used very many important words all the time, was read much less carefully than Shakespeare, and as a result, there are very large amount of antedatings and other important terms from Nash that are missing from the OED, where we do a much better job of catching things from Shakespeare. So we're trying to redress the problems that caused.
So there was sort of a bias in his favor at one time?
Yes, there was a bias in his favor based on his literary reputation.
Okay.
You know, plus these external biases like the availability of concordances that would lead you to use a Shakespeare quote without necessarily needing to for any other reason. Mm.
My guest is Jesse Scheidlauer, and we're talking about the Shorter Oxford English Dictionary. It just came out in the fifth edition. And he joins us today in the Book Nook. What's different about the way you've laid it out? It's very readable, and I know that you've taken great care to make it that way. What have you done differently, say, from the last edition?
The original edition, or at least the last edition of the Shorter, was typeset in a very straightforward, very almost boring way. There are no illustrations in it, just like the full OED. And there's really nothing to break up these very large text blocks in a sort of old-fashioned serif typeface. And when you're looking at that amount of material, people found that it got sort of difficult to see. Uh-huh. Among the things we did here, we used a lighter typeface that really opened up the page a bit. It looks less threatening. The citations go in shaded blocks, so it's clear where the citations are. You know, more use of sans serif typefaces, which research indicates now people find easier to read in certain cases. The person who did the redesign was a professor of design at an English university who's widely known for his work on readability. And in fact, we were able to get the dictionary to a state where everyone thinks it's much more readable and in fact takes up less space. So it wasn't just adding more white space. There is more material in there, but at the same time, it's more readable.
Well, it's beautiful. I was very impressed by it. The book is The Shorter Oxford English Dictionary. It's just come out in the 5th edition, and Jesse Scheidlauer joins us. I picked out some words. I picked out one word in each letter of the alphabet just to kind of chat about with you, and I'm not going to take you by surprise with any of these, but you might not remember some of them. You had a quote in the section for arbiter, and it was from David Halberstam. I thought this was a good example of some of the quotes he used. And he says, "Her taste was impeccable. She was not too much of an arbiter of fashion as she was fashion herself." I like that.
It's a good quote. It's hard, by the way, finding good illustrative examples of things like this. I mean, even relatively common words. It's hard finding an example that, without knowing anything else about the word or knowing very little about the word, you could look at it and say, well, I know exactly what it means now just from looking at the example. The original plan, when the plan for the OED was being formulated in the middle of the 19th century, was that every quote in it should be able on its own to illustrate the sense, that without seeing the definition, you could look at a quote and know what the word meant. Extremely optimistic, which they realized almost immediately, but it's still a thrill when you can get a site that's that diagnostic of what something is.
I can remember feeling a thrill as an adolescent when I discovered that dictionaries had words in them that we weren't supposed to say in public or on the radio, and I always found that we always zeroed in on those words in amazement because they were actually there and they were a part of the language. Do you have any thoughts?
Well, yes. I mean, we agree, and for many years, for decades by now, the idea of lexicographers has been, the beliefs of lexicographers has been that, at least for adult dictionaries, for large-scale adult dictionaries, that they should include all the words that are a common part of language, because those are the sort of things that people need to look up. Our purpose is to not give people the words that we or anyone else thinks are acceptable to use. There's no official English language. People often think that putting something into the Oxford English Dictionary means that it's official or that it's okay to use in some way. But that's not the case. There's no government body in charge of the language. There's no even semi-official body in charge of it. The language is just what you use. So we think, and most lexicographers think now, that people are better served by having words in a dictionary than having words not in a dictionary. Mm-hmm. And by putting them in, we can give it labels. So words that are vulgar or words that are racially offensive or whatever, we can give labels to indicate that there are concerns about the use of these words. People can look at them and decide for themselves based on what we show, based on the evidence, based on the labeling, based on usage notes, if necessary, that something is okay or not okay to use in a given circumstance.
Under the letter B for the word ball, you have a quote from Noel Coward who says, "You can't even do a straight walk-off without balling it up." And you also have a quote in there from Gore Vidal that we can't use on the radio, but I love these quotes. I zeroed in on the highlighted, the dark areas, because I wanted to see what was there, and it's very readable.
Good. I'm very glad you find it that way. We really are pleased. We thought, when we were working on the design, we thought we had a design that was really good, and we're very pleased to hear that a lot of other people, that almost everyone who has seen the book thinks the same way.
Under the letter C for the word cabbage, you have a quote from one of my favorite people to quote from, H.L. Mencken. He says, the quacks, in all probability, cabbaged most of their victims' property. Now, I had never heard that usage of cabbage before.
I can't tell you when that usage made it into the dictionary. But, you know, Mencken is someone, you know, he cited throughout the dictionary. He was, you know, he wrote The American Language, which was a very important book about American English. It's still in use now. The original edition came out in 1919. Some people who don't know much about it sort of think that it was just a, you know, one-off thing. You know, he was just a journalist who happened to dash off a book about American English. But it really is an extremely good book that is highly regarded even today by scholars.
Well, unfortunately, some of his views on society at large, I think, have diminished his reputation over the years. But that was a wonderful book.
Yes.
I love to play Scrabble, and some of the most frequent arguments that we have in Scrabble are adding suffixes and prefixes to words that are arguably not in the dictionary. And I was surprised to see a word in the D section, de-superheat. I'd never heard that term. Apparently it's a real word.
Well, that's obviously a technical term that's not in that broad use. I mean, one of the things about Scrabble to keep in mind is that Scrabble has nothing to do with what's in the language or what's in, you know, even what's in a particular dictionary, with the exception of the official Scrabble Player's Dictionary, or actually several word lists that are derived from that that are used for tournament play. So if you're serious about Scrabble, it doesn't matter if it's in the OED or not. It matters if it's in one or the other of the official word lists that are used for the game. And there's a lot that's been written about the history of these books and how they were developed. But the existence of de-superheat, if you had enough letters to play that in Scrabble, in the shorter OED, doesn't necessarily mean anything, or doesn't mean anything unless it is in one of the official Scrabble books.
Well, we cheat. We play with other dictionaries. But I had Stefan Fatsis on the program recently,
yeah,
and he set me straight. You also have terms derived from people's names, and a new one to me was Dvorakian, as in referring to the composer.
Uh-huh. It's the sort of thing, words like that are words that people tend not to notice, and even when we're working on things, or when volunteers are sending in material to us, we have to remind them that these are just as important and just as relevant as any other term. Terms that are completely predictable, that is, even if you don't know who Dvorak was, you see that word and you know what it is, you know what it means, and people tend to not pay any attention to them. The exceptions are words like that that are used considerably more broadly, that is not just referring to the works of a particular author or composer, but words that are used in an extended way, for instance, Kafkaesque,
uh-huh,
or Dickensian, which are used not just referring to the works of those authors, but referring to situations or circumstances that suggest what these people wrote about.
I like Nixonian myself.
Nixonian. I think that's it.
I didn't look that one up. I meant to look that up. You've got Euro in here, which is the new currency in a large part of Europe. What are some of the other new words that come to mind that made it into this edition?
You know, there are so many. Let's see. You know, we have computer terms. I mean, Internet is a very good example, and World Wide Web, you know, things that went in. But, you know, bad hair day is a more colloquial term that went in. Balsamic vinegar, you know, something, you know, coming to attention by the 80s. We didn't put it in. I don't know why in the 93 edition. The full Monty came in. You know, Euro was a good one. Mosh, you know, for kind of type of slam dancing. Penne, kind of pasta, reality check, road rage, snail mail for the physical delivery of mail, supermodel went in, urban legend, zero tolerance. So, you know, quite a variety of terms in different fields. The Heimlich maneuver made it into this edition.
Okay. Now, in the letter F, there is a word that people find very coarse and that they don't say in public or on the radio. I was surprised to see that this particular word is origin unknown. I always thought it was Anglo-Saxon.
It's definitely not.
Okay.
It says origin unknown. I mean, it's certainly from a Germanic background.
Okay.
It's probably a borrowing from Dutch or Low German. I'm not sure why it was given the specific origin unknown etymology for this dictionary. The OED will have fuller treatment. It's definitely not from Anglo-Saxon. The earliest example known is from the late 15th century, and the Old English period, the Anglo-Saxon period, ends around the 11th century. So there's no evidence from the Old English period for this word, and it's unlikely that it did come from Old English. Again, it's probably a borrowing from another Germanic language later. In fact, I wrote an entire book about this word.
No. You
yes,
did?
Yes, called The F Word, which spends quite a bit of time discussing the etymology and various other concerns. So if you're interested in that particular word, you can learn much more about it there.
Well, we have the right guy on the show today. I hit a button there. That particular word, it's so charged in our culture. When did you publish this book? Who was your publisher?
Random House. It originally came out in 1995, and we had a second edition in 1999 with quite a variety of additional material that we missed the first time around.
Well, I know that there's also a musical group with that name, and it's just it's a word with a lot of baggage. And
it is, but the book, one of the things it shows is that just how long it's been around and how varied its uses. You know, everyone has seen the T-shirts that have this word listed in a variety of parts of speech or a bunch of humorous sentences using it, but the range of uses and compounds and phrases that it's used in is really quite remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
And going back earlier, I mean, not just that the word itself goes back to the 15th century, but that very many of the related forms and derived forms and compounds also go back quite a long way.
Well, that's an entirely different program in itself, and my guest is Jesse Scheidlauer, and I just wish in 1995 that Random House had called me and pitched that book to me. In the letter G, we have a word. I love the sounds of words, and certain words give you a certain feeling. I remember having Harold Bloom on the program once, and he said, "Your name is Vic McCunis?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "That has a very euphoric sound to it." And if you know Dr. Bloom, that's the kind of thing that he would say. And a word that I really like in here is gubernator. I love the way that sounds. You never hear anybody call the governor the gubernator.
It's not too common anymore, but it is out there.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, yeah, the OED itself hasn't gotten around to revising that, but so the latest example is, again, from the late 19th century, but the earliest example is from 1522. It's not a recent term.
We also have an event coming up. I was not aware of it until I read the shorter Oxford English Dictionary. It's another word that has a wonderful sound. It's Hogmanay.
Hogmanay, yeah, the Scottish New Year celebration. The OED covers World English. It is based on British English, but we made a big effort to cover terms from all sorts of national varieties. So there are a lot of Americanisms that are in this edition of the dictionary, but there are words from Scotland and Ireland and South Africa and New Zealand and Australia and India and every other place.
I was also delighted to find the noun itis, I-T-I-S.
Mm-hmm.
I've always thought of that as something that traveled with a hyphen, at least.
It usually does, but not always. I'm always surprised to see words, the word ism, which, again, you see every once in a while, not even every once in a while, you see it relatively infrequently talking about this, that, and other isms, and think it sounds very new. And in fact, there are examples going back to the late 16th century from the same Thomas Nash we were speaking of before.
Oh. Well, he's a man that I need to look up. I didn't realize that he was as important as Shakespeare in his own way.
Well, he's pretty important. Yeah, let's see. Yeah, the earliest example we seem to have is from the 1890s, so not quite as old as ism, but well-established.
You're listening to the best of the Book Nook on WYSO. Going through the dictionary, the shorter Oxford Dictionary, with Jesse Scheidlauer back in 2002, and I picked out a word
for each letter of the alphabet, and we have just a little bit further to go to get to the letter Z, and we'll bring you that right after this. You're listening to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO, revisiting an interview I did 17 years ago with Jesse Scheidlauer, an editor of the Oxford English Dictionary. I hope you've been learning some new words. I certainly did, and we're ready to close out the alphabet in this final portion of our interview with Jesse Scheidlauer.
My guest is Jesse Scheidlauer with the Shorter Oxford English Dictionary. It just came out in a fifth edition. He joins us in the Book Nook. We always hear about someone having seniority, but I never have heard anyone talk about juniority.
Well, it's less common, but no reason why it couldn't be used. That's one of the interesting points. And again, this dates back to the 16th century as well. It's not at all recent. One of the things that's useful about this example, people often will say that English has a word for everything, or there's any concept that you can come up with, there has to be a word for, and it's not true at all. And this is a perfect example. Seniority is extremely common, and juniority is very rare. There's no reason why that should be the case. You have a word, its opposite, should be out there, but it's really not. So it's a good pair to keep in mind.
And we're in Hanukkah right now, and as we were looking at the Jewish calendar, would this be Kislev right now?
Kislev, yeah.
Okay. I learned so much from dictionaries. This is really a wonderful experience to go through here and read these. Another word that I think has a wonderful sound is locofoco, which is a self-igniting cigar or match, or a member of the Democratic Party, particularly the radical wing, in and after 1835, locofocoism.
Yes. Yeah, good 19th century U.S. political terminology.
Yeah. How fun. I bet you love coming to work every day.
I do love coming to work every day.
My guest is Jesse Scheidlauer. We're talking about the Shorter Oxford English Dictionary. And Jesse, we just went through the whole first volume, at least one word for each letter of the alphabet.
Well, there's no running out of words.
Now, here's a word. I seem to remember there was a controversy when someone used this word because they thought it was something else a few years ago. The word is niggard.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember this? There was a controversy. Someone used that, some well-known person. I think it might have been a politician.
It was a Washington, D.C. Political councilman or someone, not a prominent politician, but someone working in city politics, and he used the word niggardly.
Oh, yeah.
In relation to some sort of budget argument, which is completely unrelated to the racial slur that it sounds like, but it was viewed insensitive of him to have used this word at all, and he was originally forced to resign, and then there was an outcry about this, why he would have to resign for using a word merely because it sounded like an offensive word, and he eventually got his job back. But, that was, I think, in 1999.
Have you ever been punished, Jesse, for having such a good vocabulary?
No, but I'm sure if I had used the word we were discussing earlier in elementary school, people wouldn't have been too happy.
Okay. I also discovered that another word for a drive-in cinema is an ozoner. Now,
yeah.
I had never heard that.
I was working on that recently, in fact. It's not too common now. In fact, it's quite rare now, except in historical context. But in the 1940s and 50s, it was a pretty widespread term. Now you tend to see it only in historical examples. I mean, there's one thing I'm looking at right now is families from the suburbs flocked to the new auto theaters, and by 1960, one of every four exhibition dollars was coming from these ozoners. So, talking about the term that was in use in 1960, that happens all the time. A term is only in use for a particular time and then falls out of use. But the purpose of the OED is not, as I said before, it's not just to show the terms that are current. It's to show the terms that have been a part of the language. So even if no one is using ozoner right now, it's important that it was in very common use at a particular time. Now, for a smaller dictionary, for a one-volume desk dictionary of the sort that many people use all the time, I agree, you wouldn't want to have terms like this in. But for a historical dictionary, the whole purpose is so that you can see what the language was like at a particular time. So if you're curious about this word, you can find out that it was in use in the 1950s and 1940s. And that's important if you're talking about a study of the language.
All the more reason I love this dictionary. It's the shorter Oxford English Dictionary. It just came out in the 5th edition. We've been joined today by Jesse Scheid-Lauer, and we've been talking about words. We are a public radio station, and over the many years that I've been here, several times a year we have membership campaigns where we go on the air for a week or 10 days at a time, and we talk and talk and talk. I'm sure you've heard them, Jesse, where we ask people to give us money, and we say the same things over and over again, and I discovered what it is we're suffering from. It's called palilalia. Are you familiar with that word?
I think I haven't heard that before, I have to say.
It's a speech disorder characterized by involuntary repetition of words, phrases, or sentences.
Okay. Always good to know there's a word for that.
Yes, I never knew what it was we were doing. I thought it was more of a quackle, which is of a duck.
Okay.
As you can see, we're getting near the end of the dictionary. I'm beginning to turn rubicund.
Okay.
Which is inclined to redness.
Yep.
I'm becoming embarrassed by my behavior here. My guest is Jesse Scheid-Lauer. The book is The Shorter Oxford English Dictionary. Another word, I love the sound of it, is scroil, a scoundrel or wretch. Now, this word obviously is archaic, but you don't have one of those. What's that sign that you put next to the archaic words like scrow? You've got a word next to words that are archaic, right?
A dagger.
Or a dagger. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure why. I mean, perhaps there was recent evidence for that. This is a term that was in Ben Jonson. There is an example in Shakespeare. There's an example in Sir Walter Scott. So that's the sort of evidence you would want. That if you have a term like this, even if it's completely obsolete, you don't want to remove a word that's in so many famous authors.
Okay.
As that.
What is the significance of the 17th century? What happened in the 17th century to the English language where you kind of have a break-off point there?
Well, the decision was made for this dictionary, for the shorter, that is not the full OED, but for the shorter, to use the 17th century as a cutoff, where if a term was obsolete before then, we would not put it in the shorter, unless it was in, I think, Shakespeare, Milton, the King James Bible, or someone else. I think there were four.
Okay.
Anything that was not in those authors and was obsolete by then, we wouldn't put it in, on the grounds that we couldn't imagine anyone needing to look these up that wouldn't be using either the full OED or a specialized dictionary of whatever whatever author he was reading, or something like that.
I've always been tempted to address a violent, boisterous, overbearing, or quarrelsome person as a termagant because I figured they wouldn't have any idea what I was talking about, but I've always felt it was too dangerous. And that's our letter T word. And my name is Victor, and I discovered that a female Victor would be a victress.
A victress? Okay.
Okay, we're almost done, Jesse. Let's see. The next one is letter W, and the word is a person lacking wit or sense, a want wit. Now, I've been accused of this.
That's a very, very Elizabethan-sounding term.
Uh-huh.
In fact, it's in The Merchant of Venice, but goes back earlier than that even. I think the earliest example in the OED is from the 1440s. So, again, not maybe in current use, but a good example of something you'd want to have in the dictionary.
Actually, I missed one because this is someone I would emulate, someone I would like to be, and that is a person who goes everywhere, a ubiquarian.
Okay, well, I think ubiquitous is a reasonably well-known word now. Ubiquarian, well, not very well-known now.
Mm-hmm. And here's one that would look good on a Scrabble board. X-U. How would you pronounce that? Zoo?
Shoe, I assume. Shoe?
That is a former monetary unit of Vietnam equal to 1/100th of a dong.
Yeah. Sue, it seems.
Sue.
Not shoe.
Okay. And we've reached the letter Z, and I picked a word that I think you've put words in italics that are actually from foreign languages. Is that correct?
Sometimes, yes, if it seems to be completely foreign but used in English.
Okay.
We would put it in italics.
This is a Russian word for an hors d'oeuvre, a zakuska.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, food terms are one of the big areas of foreign borrowings in dictionaries. You can always count, especially now when there's a lot of interest in regional cooking from around the world, you can always count on new terms coming in by borrowings from other languages of that sort.
Well, it's really a wonderful new dictionary. It's the shorter Oxford English Dictionary. It just came out in the 5th edition, and Jesse Scheidlauer has joined us. And it's really a wonderful experience to read this dictionary, and I hope more people will take it up.
Well, thanks. We do, too.
Jesse, you mentioned that the big OED, the 20-volume, is now only available online. Now, how does that work? Does someone buy the software? What do they do?
Well, typically it's sold to institutions. You can get individual subscriptions, but the goal now is to get libraries and academic institutions and things like that to sign up. It's easier for everyone, we find. So you would go to the library just like it is now. I mean, most you can buy the full OED, but most people don't because it's 20 volumes and $3,000.
Mm.
So if you need to use it, you go to the library. We are working with libraries to try to get off-site access to the dictionary so that if you have a library card from your library or if you're affiliated with the university, you can use the dictionary off-campus by signing in from home to try to make the dictionary as widely available as we can.
Well, it's really been a treat to have you on the program, Jesse. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on, Vic. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to the best of the Book Nook on WYSO, reprising my 2002 interview with Jesse Scheidlauer, who at the time was an editor of the Oxford English Dictionary. He has since left Oxford and gone on to other endeavors, and I thought it was fascinating, and it kind of dated our conversation when he talked about the new words that had been included in the most recent edition of the dictionary. That was pretty funny, words like Internet. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, 17 years later, we're still adding words to the dictionary, and we're still seeing other words going out of usage. And we talked about that as well during that conversation. Jesse Scheidlauer is an amazing guy, and I went back and looked up his book that he mentioned during the interview, which I was not aware that he had written a book called The F Word. He apparently is an authority on that, and I guess if you work for a dictionary company, you would have certain words that you were interested in, and you can look it up. That book is still in print. It went into a second edition. If that's your thing, if you like reading books about one word. Speaking of words, we learn a lot about words in the dictionary, and we learn a lot about life when we listen to songs with ideas about our world, about things that we should know, about things that maybe we don't want to know about. If you're listening to the news these days, sometimes you just feel like hitting the button and saying, okay, enough's enough. I don't want to hear any more about this subject. I don't want to know what I should know. We're going to go back now for a little Book Nook bonus. Recorded 20 years ago, the folk singer Jack Hardy made an appearance on the program, and he has since passed away, but he was the creator of thousands of songs, and he wrote a very special song that we're going to feature next, recorded live in studio. Here's Jack Hardy talking about the things that he ought to know.
George C. Scott and John Wayne get shot. This I ought to know. I ought to know what the drinking gourd means. I ought to know more than I have a dream. I ought to know about the back of the bus and the crackabilly clubs. This I ought to know, but I don't. I don't know nothing about nothing. But I'm proud to stand upright. I don't know nothing about nothing. But my future looks so bright, illumined by the light. Laugh track, sound bites, and a replay to get it right. I ought to know.
You know, that's a fun song, and yet that's a very scary song, Jack.
That's what it was intended to be.
That was the late Jack Hardy, recorded 20 years ago on the program, talking about the things he ought to know. And wow, what a singer, what a songwriter he was. Be sure to tune in for the Book Nook tomorrow, when my guest will be Catherine Scanlon at 10:30 tomorrow morning. I'll be talking to her about a book called Og 9 Fog in the Book Nook.